When I was in elementary school, my mother used to say to me, I would give anything to be your age again, because you're so free. In my mind, I'm not free. I go to school every day and I have homework every day. I'd rather be you, because you don't have to go to school every day, you don't have homework every day, and you make your own money, and you have your own bicycle. Back then we didn't have cars. Back in Korea, and you can go anywhere you like, so you're the one who's free. But now that I am my mother's age, when she said that to me, I totally understand where she was coming from. Because not only do I have to go to work every day, but I also have to have the responsibility of taking care of the family and also the church. Back when I was in elementary school, even though I was busy, only the person I needed to worry about was myself. But now, not only about myself, but also my family and my extended family in the church. And so there's greater burden and less freedom than when I was in elementary school. Now, I realized that, because we're going to be talking about this freedom. What is freedom? Our sense of freedom is not as much dependent upon our circumstances as it is on our mindset. That's what I realized. If you guys remember the Disney song, Little Mermaid, right? Ariel, she sings a song in the cave, and there's a line, a couple lines that go like this. Up where they walk, up where they run, up where they stay all day in the sun, wandering free, wish I could be part of that world. What would I give if I live out of these waters? What would I pay to spend the day warm on the sand? So she's a mermaid and she's looking out, right, of the ocean and then looking into the land, and she's longing to be walking. She's longing to be living on the land because she feels so trapped down under the sea. But I thought about this, right? Wait a minute. If you took earth science, right, you know that actually the ocean is bigger than, right, far bigger than the land area, right, by the ratio of 2 to 1, right? 2/3 of the earth is covered with water. So Ariel, I'm not really getting this. Why are you, right, envying people living on the land when you have so much more mass in which to swim around in? And also, on land, we are bound by two dimensions, right? We can only go from side to side and front and back. That's it. We can't go up unless we get on the airplane, right? But in the water, you're not defined or you're not restricted to two-dimensional movement. You can go up and down, side to side. So you have almost unlimited, right, greater area in which you can explore, right, and just be free. So why are you looking at somebody who really is not as free as you and you're longing to be with them and you think that they are free and you're not? And I realize that it's not so much our circumstances, but it's really what our mindset is, how we see freedom or where we think we get our freedom from. And it has a lot to do with our desire. It has a lot to do with what we want to do, and that's what we want to talk about today. Now, last week, Pastor LD started this sermon and gave a great message on Jesus basically saying that if the Son sets you free, then you will be free indeed. And I want to go further into it and give you a slightly different aspect of it and go right down to what is freedom, right? What is freedom and how do we get it and what was done for it? So I want to be very, very practical, right? How do we enjoy, how do we employ this freedom, right, that we all want? And when, what does it look like? How do we get it? And what was done for it, right? So let's go one by one. What is freedom? Let me define it this way. It will sound wrong, okay? But let me defend it after that. Freedom is doing what we want forever. That's it. Freedom is doing what we want forever. It's probably not that different than how you were thinking of, right? Freedom is doing whatever I want forever. I know that sounds worldly and sounds like it's a contradiction to what Pastor LD said, but you will find out that it is not. It is a very carefully thought through definition. You are free, you're truly free when you can make a choice to do something that will bring you pleasure and happiness, right? If you're forced to be a certain way, or if you feel like you have to be or have to do something, then you're not truly free. When you do something because you really truly want to do it and because it gives you happiness and joy and pleasure, that's when you are truly free. But you have noticed the word that I put in there, right? That you may not have put in yourself. Freedom is doing whatever we want to do forever. And that's a vital part, forever. Because as the world defines it, which is pretty much, well, freedom is doing whatever I want to do all the time, right? Only problem is that whatever you choose to do, you really can't do it forever. Because there are limiting factors in this world that limits us from doing whatever we want to do forever. We simply can't do whatever we want to do forever. For example, let's say I ate whatever I wanted, however much I ever wanted, for every meal I wanted. Okay? So I'm eating type of food that you would eat at Puyallup State Fair. Okay? Butterball, every meal. All right? Deep fried pork belly. Okay? And scone. And ice cream, right? Easily 2,000 calories every meal, okay? And the night snack for all of that stuff, right? Because I'm putting in like 6,000, 7,000 calories into my body, and because I don't want to go work out, I don't work out. Now, let me tell you, and that's exercising my freedom, right? I'm eating whatever I want to eat. Now, how long do you think I'll be able to do that? I'll soon be 500 pounds, and you won't recognize me. I'll have to change all my wardrobe, right? And then I won't live past 50 because of a heart attack or some kind of, right, evil things happening to me because of what I put into my body. In other words, ironically, acting freely, temporarily, actually prohibits me from being free in the long run. The very act of trying to act free limits me from being free in the future. And that's how most things are in this world. There are limiting factors which makes us not be able to be free forever. So then, what are these limiting factors? Because we need to get rid of these limiting factors, right, that will bar us from having to do what we want to do, which is our freedom. Three things: sin, the law, death. They limit our freedom. Let's look at sin first. How many of the good things that God gave us today have been ruined by sin? Look at your own life. How many things have been tainted by your sin or your parents' sin or somebody else's sin, right, that are close to you? How many good things, right? How many good churches have been ruined by sin? How many healthy bodies have been ruined by sin? How many good relationships or good marriages have been ruined by somebody's selfishness, right? How many schools or even governments, countries have been ruined by one man who was greedy and who wanted power for himself, right? Sin ruins everything that is good and honorable, both publicly and personally. Romans 6:18, Paul says, "You have been set free from sin, and have become slaves to righteousness," meaning that sin enslaves, right? Sin takes away our freedom. And the enticement of sin is that it promises happiness and comfort and pleasure. And it is pleasurable for the time being. It does bring us temporary happiness. But when we bite into this thing called sin, the poison is released and we lose our happiness and comfort and also the freedom to get out of it. Let me illustrate it this way. I keep on telling the young people that the most dangerous time that most dangerous time to try anything harmful, such as drugs, right, or smoking or alcohol, is the very first time that they try it. Not the last time they tried it and then it just, you know, it made them go over the cliff, right, and then kill them, right, overdose. That's not the most dangerous time. It's the very first time you tried it. The reason is because you simply opened up a floodgate, right? The first time you do it, it's so much easier to do it the second time. Why? Because the first time, right, contrary to what a lot of people tell you, nothing bad happens. you smoke, right? Or you do drugs, and you know, you've seen commercials about, oh, you know, this is your brain on drugs, you know, in the frying pan, and then all ugly and so on, and you do it, and then nothing really bad happens, and it feels good, and you know, all limbs are all still there, and you can function better, you can even sometimes think better, it felt good, nothing bad happened, so they must have lied. And so the second time is so much easier, right? Because now you went over that hump and barrier and nothing bad happened. Now, you know, you don't feel as guilty anymore. And then the third time you do it, you become a little more numb to it. And then it's easier and easier and easier. And you're now on a slippery slope. You're forever going into it. Now you're knee deep the whole time. And this is, right, this is the deceitfulness of sin. The whole time you think you're in control, right? Sin makes us think, well, you know what? I got myself into it. I can get myself out of it anytime I want. But right now is not the time. It's not harming me. It's not affecting my church work. It's not affecting my work or my family. And so I can keep on doing this. And then if I feel like, you know, this is affecting me in a negative way, I'll stop. And that is a very trap that sin sets for us. It's like a bear trap, right? It claws you, and you get trapped in, and you feel like, okay, I can get out any time. I knew the trap was there. I knew that, right? I just went into it by myself, and I can get out, but you can't. The harder you try to get out, the tighter it grips you and will not let you go, right? More like you don't want to go. And that is a deceitfulness of sin, isn't it? That we don't want to get out of that sinful lifestyle that is really, literally killing us. And you've seen that in your family members. You've seen that in your own life, that there's this fight. I know this is not good for me, but I don't want to quit. Right? I know this is killing me, but this is not the right time yet. I can prolong it a little bit longer, and then maybe I can quit, but not now. You start justifying, and sin has a grip on you, and it takes away your freedom, making you do what you truly want to do, you can't do because of sin. Adam and Eve enjoyed almost limitless freedom in the Garden of Eden. Have you thought about this? You know, we are all fixated upon why did God put that tree in the Garden of Eden so that they can't eat? You know, that's not fair. Listen, if our land only had one law, right? I mean, I don't know how many laws the United States have, like, you know, I don't know, like thousands, right? But we only have one law, right? Would you still say, well, it's not fair that you gave us one law, right? No, you only were given one law, which means that you can do whatever else you wanted to do. You could eat anything you wanted to eat from, and you'll be fine, right? But just don't eat from this one tree. Guess what? Adam and Eve wanted total, absolute freedom. Why not that tree, right? We want to eat from it as well. Why are you barring us? And so we want total, absolute freedom, right? I don't even want one law, no law. And ironically, what happened? They lost their freedom completely, didn't they? They got kicked out of the Garden of Eden. So they lost their freedom even to be inside the garden, to be able to eat from other trees. Not only did they lose the freedom not to be able to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, but they lost all freedom to eat from any other tree because they've been barred from it. And that's often what sin does. We thought, if we can just add that one thing into our lives will be better. But we add that one thing into our lives and we end up losing everything else, and then we end up losing that very thing as well. And that's what sin does. Okay. Number two. What else hinders our freedom? Law also hinders our freedom. The law, God's law, okay, let's say, or even the land of, right, the law of the land, but especially God's law. God's law is God's absolute standard, and it lets us know how far we fall short of it. So the law is like a mirror. It shows us what we are and where we fall short. Romans 7:7 says this, if it had not been for the law, I would not have known sin. So law tells us God's absolute standard, and as we're looking at the law, oh man, I'm looking at my own self. I can't live up to that. Right? I don't measure up. And so law, what it ends up happening is that law ends up making us guilty and shameful about ourselves, right? Because as we look at the law, we don't measure up. We feel guilty and we feel shameful about ourselves. And that makes us what? That makes us not feel good about ourselves, and that takes away our freedom. if you're having to do something because of guilt or shame, you're not doing it freely, right? You're doing it dutifully, but you're not doing it because you want to. So the law, by producing guilt and shame, also bars us from having to do what we truly want to do forever. Frankly, let's be honest. Isn't that why a lot of people no longer come to church, or they won't set foot in the church? Because they think, right? Because we preach holiness, right? We preach godliness, and we preach righteous living, not in order to earn our salvation, but for the sons and daughters of God who are the children of God. We should live, right, according to, right, those standards, so that we can be salt and light of the world. However, the world doesn't like that. World says, well, if you guys are going to live like that and I have to live like that, then that's going to produce a guilt and shame, and you're not accepting me for who I am, as sinful as I am, or whatever I want to do, you're not letting me do, right? All the issues that we're talking about, whether it's homosexuality or abortion or all the hot topics, of, well, if you're going to be like that, then we don't want part of you. And so they feel like Christianity limits their freedom, right? We won't allow them to do what they want to do. And so you see how the law has as a possible means to bar us from being completely free. And I believe it is true. Law has that kind of effect. Romans 7:7 again. If it not had been for the law, I would not have known sin. And sometimes we don't want to know, right? Something is sinful so that we can keep on doing it. Right? And as they stay away from church that are teaching them holiness and godliness, what we can't get away, what they can't get away from is their conscience, right? Even though they distance themselves from God and from church, their conscience a lot of times speaks to them that this ain't right. Your life isn't right, right? There's something not right about your life, and they know it. And so many of them, right, struggle with guilt and shame, and that's certainly not a free life, is it? So law takes away from our freedom. Third hindrance is death. I'll be very short. We aren't going to be young forever. Janet thought she was still 19. She's not. She's 42. tore her Achilles. She would not have done that, right? She would not have torn her Achilles if she were in her 20s. Not her fault. Right, because it's just human nature. We think we're 19 forever, and I do that all the time to myself. We're all going to deteriorate. We're all going to get old. We're all going to die. And our freedom will die with it. Right? Even if we can do away with sin, right, by denying its existence, because that's what the world tries to do, right? Even if we can change the law, what we can't do away with is death. Right? We can't simply do away with that. No matter how rich you are and how healthy you are, eventually you are going to die and you will lose your freedom with it. So Romans 6:21, but what fruit were you getting at that time from the things of which you are now ashamed? For the end of these things is death. So death ends it all. We'll lose our freedom. However, I define freedom as us being able to do what we want to do forever. Freedom is being able to do what we want to do forever. And there are things in this world that limit our freedom, such as sin, the law, and death. So with these limiting factors, how can we be free forever? How do we get this freedom? Right? That is a question. How can we get this freedom? Two ways. Either we can try to get it externally, in other words, changing our circumstances or changing our world, or internally, by changing our desire. Okay, so we can have freedom, true freedom, by changing the world externally, or changing the inside, changing what we desire, what we want to do. So let's look at one at a time, right? Changing the world. Changing the world so that what I just hindering factors, right? Such as death, sin, right? And those things are not factors anymore, right? In our life, so Think about what we try to do, the politicians try to do, even as we are speaking in the United States of America, right? What do we do with sin? We know that sin is a hindrance to our freedom. So how do we try to get rid of it? Well, we try to get rid of it by not talking about it at all, ignoring it. Nobody, have you ever seen or heard a politician mention the word sin? No. Like, and even in churches, right, we no longer mention the word sin because they think that it will offend people, right, and they will occupy the seats. And most people don't even know what that is. And so they use words such as, oh, mistakes of the past, right? Or personality flaws. Not sin as in something that was against the absolute standard of God that makes us feel bad, right? So we try to deal with sin in that way by simply ignoring or making it go away by not talking about it, right? Okay, what about the law? What do we do with the law? Right now, it's election season, right? And all kinds of signs are everywhere on TV and then, you know, on those lawn markers and so on. Vote for this, vote for that. What are we trying to do? We're trying to change our law, right? Why do we have such a hard time passing the Judge Kavanaugh as the Supreme Court Justice of the United States? Why do we have all kinds of issues with him, right? Because to us, if we can simply make the law so that I can do whatever I want, then I'll be happier. Then I'll be more free. So let's change the law so that I can continue doing what I want to do. You see how the world tries to do it, right? Externally, by changing things. Let's get rid of sin. Let's change the law. And then lastly, let's deal with death, right? Medical technology, right? And let's beat cancer, for example, right? Let's beat AIDS. Let's find a cure. Okay, let's give scholarships to these bright young minds so that they can finally cure things that will hinder us from having our freedom. Let's prolong life as long as we can and delay death as long as we can. Let's get rid of, right, all kinds of diseases that are taking away our freedom through death. So let me ask you, how are we doing? How are we doing in this department? Are we freer today than yesteryears? I don't think we are really getting anywhere trying to change the world. And the reason why it won't work, okay, reason why trying to gain freedom externally by changing the world is this, because our own desires are contradictory in nature. Our own desires are contradictory in nature that are mutually exclusive, that can't happen. For example, we want to eat all that we want to eat, and we still want to be skinny. That's a contradiction. I'm sorry. Right? It just can't happen. Well, somebody got to come up with a pill, right? That I eat all that I want, and then the fat will just dissolve, right? Just pay $89.95, right? And shipping is included and all that, right? And we buy into it. It's like, oh, I can eat whatever I want, and then I'll lose all my fat while I'm sleeping. It doesn't work, right? Like, I want to get a good paying job, right? But I don't want to work for it. I'm sorry, that's a contradiction. That's a classic example of I want cake and have it too, right? Or I want to eat cake or have cake and eat it too. It's one or the other, not both. So, trying to have freedom, absolute freedom, by changing the world won't work. We've tried. We failed. The other way is by changing our desire or having our desire changed internally. And that's the way I believe Jesus tries to do. Imagine, okay, if what you want has changed, what you desired fundamentally has changed. So you're doing everything that you want to do, truly want to do. Okay? Not because you feel like you have to do it, not because you feel like, you know, if you don't do it, then you're going to go to hell, but you're doing everything your heart desires to do. But what if that thing that you desire to do is actually a good and godly and holy thing that God approves of? Right? Good thing, not only physically, but also spiritually and mentally, right? And socially. If your desire has changed such that it is good and holy and godly, couldn't it last forever? Because it will only not continue on in this world, but it will continue on in the next world, in heaven. As a matter of fact, I believe that's exactly what heaven is.
Heaven is a place where you and I are completely free. We are doing exactly what we want to do. All the time, forever, we are doing exactly what we want to do. Some people ask me, Pastor Hong, would we be able to sin in heaven? Right? We know that there's no sin in heaven, but would we be able to? Now, if we are not able to sin, doesn't that make us a robot? Right? God programmed this goodness in us, and then so we're only doing good things, right? Like singing the choir and, you know, singing hymns and you know, like playing the harp all day long and praising, praise you, praise you, praise you, praise you, like 10 million times. Holy, 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 right? Even though we don't really want to, but we don't even know it because we're like robots, right? We're just parroting the words. No, I believe we will be able to sin, but listen to me, we will be able to sin in heaven, but we won't want to. And because we are able to do what we want to do in heaven, we never will. It's almost like I gave you sewer water, and I gave you delicious fresh fruit juice. Which one would you like to drink, right? None of you will pick sewer water. Why would you want to pick that when you won't want it, right? Why would you want to sin when it gives you no delight and you won't want to do it? So even the possibility is there, you won't. Because you have tasted the Lord and he is good. And there's nothing that is better than him. And so you will continue to go to him for that living water. So you won't sin. Right? You're doing exactly what you want to do because your desire, your want to have been sanctified. Right? That is a way I believe God changes us and gives us freedom. Jesus gets it by making us into a new men and new women with new desires. And that's exactly what he meant when he told Nicodemus that you must be born again. What did he mean? You must have a new heart. You must have a new desire. It's not just your behavior, Nicodemus. I know that you're the head of the Pharisees, right? Your behavior is there. You're good. But that's not going to be enough. You have to be changed from inside out. So you heard me say this a lot, right? Christians are not those people who simply change what we do. Christians are those who have been changed what we want to do. So Jesus not only changes what we do, not just behavior modification, but Jesus changes us from inside out so that he changes what we want to do, our desires. And so when we do what we desire to do, we're doing it in accordance, right, in God's will that will bring us maximum pleasure, not only to us, but also to him. So St. Augustine said these famous words. I believe it was him. He said, when maybe somebody asked him, Mr. St. Augustine, like, what are some behaviors, right? What are some things that we can do and what we cannot do? And he said this, love God and do whatever you want to do. Love God and do whatever you want to do. Oh, wait, that's not a good advice because, like, what if they want to go off and do stupid things, right? No, St. Augustine is saying, if you love God, if your heart is in love with God, whatever you want to do will have changed so that you will do whatever will please God. If I am so in love with my wife and my children, would I do anything to hurt them? Right? And for you to tell me, well, love your family, love your wife, love your children, and do whatever you want to do, guess what I would want to do? I want to do whatever will be loving toward my family and my kids and my wife. I won't do stupid things that will harm them in any way. You see? The desire, the heart, our want to must change. Let me give you this illustration. I'm losing my voice, by the way, if you couldn't tell. I married rather late, at age 34. One reason why I delayed, okay, it was not because I couldn't get a girl, all right. One reason why I delayed was because I saw getting married as being tied down, right? I was single, I was enjoying my life, I could just pick up and go. Right? I didn't have to make an appointment with anybody, and I don't have to check with my wife or my kid's schedule. I can just go, right? Because I saw my friends who got married earlier, And whenever, hey, man, you want to go play basketball like tomorrow night? And they go, oh, sorry, you know, I got my wife and my kids, you know, like, you got to call me like at least 2 weeks ahead. It's like, come on, man, let's go, let's play, right? It's like, you're tied down. I don't want to get there. Right? I don't want to be tied down. That's like slavery, right? And especially having kids. I mean, that's when I used to tell them, your life is over once you have your kids, right? Because, like, you're all, you know, always looking at your kids' schedule, you know, like soccer and basketball and all these things, and you have no life of your own. I don't want that, man. So a lot of times, you know, nowadays what they do is they delay marriage as long as they can, right? Young people, right? It's getting later and later when they, well, the time that they get married. And then once they get married, they don't have kids for a long time. Why? Because it crimps their lifestyle, right? Once kids come, slavery, right? That we are tied to them. My experience, okay, maybe it's different from other people, but it could be, okay, it could be this way. Last 13 years, I can truly say that I've been in love with three women. In the last 13 years, I've been just in love with three women, with Janet, of course, and then my two girls, right, that have been born 12 and 10 years ago. And I've taken more trips in the last 13 years than the previous 34 years combined. I didn't believe in trips before then, right? Whatever is good for the Lord, right? Just for the Lord. Mission trips, yes. Personal trips, no. Why would I do that? But 13 years, I've gone so many trips, and 99% of them have been family trips. Why do I take so many trips? Am I doing that because, you know what, I want to be a good example to my church. I want to show them their pastor is a family man and they should be spending time with their family. So even though I really don't want to, it's money and it's my time out and I just want to stay home, but I'm just going to, right? I just want to sacrifice, take one for the team, and I'm going to do it for the, you know, sake of my church so that they can keep me as their pastor and keep paying me so that I can buy whatever I want. I mean, is that why I took trips? No. I took those trips because I want to. Right? I want to spend time with them. I like being with them. Last September, you know, we took, Janet couldn't go, but last minute, you know, she asked me, like, I can't go, you know, honey, because I got this school thing going on, and it was a last minute thing. I already made a reservation in the hotel in Portland. You know what? I'm still going to go. I took my kids. It wasn't very fun. I don't think they had a lot of fun. But my idea is that I just want to spend time with them, you know, because I can see them. Man, they're already 12 and 10, and who knows how much longer I have of them. I don't want them to go. I want to spend every minute that I have with them. Because why? Because I love them. I love to be with them. My heart is there. I am doing exactly what my freedom dictates. I'm doing what I want to do. Now, if my friends are, right, unmarried people saw me, it's like, Pastor Hong, you are bound. You're a slave to your family, right? That's so boring. Why would you want to do that? Don't you want to go, you know, partying with your friends and so on? Like, why would I want to do that? I've done that. It's really not that great. I'd rather be with my people that I'm in love with. So in complete freedom, right, because my heart has changed, I'm doing exactly what I want to do, and I feel completely free in it. Again, this is hard to understand for single people, perhaps because you've heard from married people that they can't wait to have their kids grow out of the house and be on their own so they can have their freedom back. You've heard that, right? And I've heard that too, and that's why I think I delayed as long as I have. But that's not every case. You could actually be in love with your wife and your kids so much so that you don't want them to grow up ever. It's possible. So what I'm saying is, it's not the external circumstances. It's your heart. It's your desire. It's your want to, right? That must change. So true freedom comes when our desire is changed such that what we desire is good and right and God-honoring and can last forever. But let me ask you, can you change your desire? Can you change what you love? Can you change what you want to do? Right? Sample fingers. No, you can't. Right? Jesus has to do it. How do you make yourself born again? How do you give yourself a new heart? You can't. Jesus must do it. When the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. We don't set ourselves free, right? the Son, Jesus, sets us free. Only then our hearts are changed and we can be free. So what did it take Jesus for him to earn us this freedom? Listen, you heard this. Freedom isn't free. Jesus snapped his fingers to create the world. Right? Let there be light. Let there be this. Let there be that. And then it was this. But earning our freedom was much more costly. He had to come, become a human being, live here for 30 years, 33 years, and go to the cross and die the most cruel death. So in other words, he became a slave to this world. Right? He allowed himself to be bound, literally bound, stuck to the tree so that you and I could be free. Freedom was not free. It was very costly. Charles Wesley's hymn, "And Can It Be," there's a line that goes like this. He left his Father's throne above, so free, so infinite his grace, emptied himself of all but love, and bled for Adam's helpless race. That's us. 'Tis mercy all, immense and free, for, oh my God, it found out me. He left his Father's throne above, so free and so infinite, and let himself be bound so that he can earn us our freedom. Let me ask you, would you do that for the homeless guy who is sitting in the corner begging you for a dollar? Would you give up your home? Would you give up your education? Would you give up your job? Would you give up your family? Would you give up your house? Hey, come, be me. I'll take your place. Would you exchange your place with that homeless person? That's exactly what Jesus has done. He left his Father's home, all glory, honor, complete, absolute freedom, became a human being, lived in a tiny little country, I call it Israel, died the most horrible death, being stuck, bound to the cross, so that he could earn your salvation and earn unlimited, unbounded freedom for you and me. John 8:28, Jesus said to them, "When you have lifted up the Son of Man, then you will know that I am he, and that I do nothing of my own authority, but speak just as the Father taught me." When you have lifted up the Son, he didn't mean when you have praised me, glorified me. No, when you have lifted me up on the cross, when you have killed me, you will know who I am. Right? There are those of you who know who he is. Let me end. Jesus directed and guided, orchestrated his own death from the very beginning so that you and I would have eternal life. Listen, there's all kinds of things that are going on with anti-Semitism right now, right? Especially with the Pittsburgh shooting in the synagogue, and there's this anti-Semitism that's rising up again. But let me say this about that. Listen, it wasn't the Jews who killed Jesus. Right? It wasn't the Jews who killed Jesus. Jesus volunteered. Why? Because if it didn't do that, you and I would be killed forever in hell. So Jesus went to the cross on his own accord, died on the cross. Right? Nobody killed him. He let himself be killed. That was his purpose from the beginning, so that you and I could be completely free. Let's pray.